Hi, I'm Ruthie, and I have a recorder. Tune in Wednesdays from 4 to 5 to Out There. We'll meet people and plants around the streets and paths of Northampton, and we'll think about ways we can share the world. Here on Valley Free Radio, or archived online at weatherbeer.com/out there. Get out if you can, but if you can't get out, tune in. We don't care if they laugh at us. Let them take the bus and leave the circle for us. They can have a Cadillac and T-1-2.
And indeed, it is Wednesday, November 23rd. This is Ruthie. My voice is a little off. I'm recovering from something, but I feel fine. My energy is fine. So today's show, there'll be other people talking, fortunately, for most of it. So the main thing I have for today is an interview with Wade Wofford. He's a producer, writer, director of a film called The Answer that's premiering at the Academy of Music this Friday evening. I got an interview with him. Also an interview with Ellen Clegg, who played some background music for the film. Ellen lives in Northampton and is a drummer and percussionist. Wade Wofford is also, I think, from Northampton, or at the very least, the Valley, Northampton-based. And there's actually a couple things I want to say, but I'm not sure if my voice will make that okay. So, you know what? I'm just going to start with this. When Wade and I were talking, the interview was from this morning at Smith College Campus Center. And then there, on the way out of the interview, I saw this flyer. Here's a flyer up at the Smith College Campus Center. Ally, verb, side with or support someone. When oppressed groups call on you as an ally, that's a privilege. Be accountable to your privilege and your power. Do not add to the pain, to the trauma, to the hurt, to the anger, to the fury, to the fear, to the panic, by refusing to take the hand of a fellow human in need. If a member of a marginalized group is calling on you to support, that is a sign of trust, of hope, of faith. And if you refuse that call for help, then you are breaking that trust, shattering that hope, and undermining that faith. Remember that a call for help can be phrased as calling out in the midst of anger and hurt, but I assure you it is most definitely a call for help, a call to arms, not a call to divide or to argue. So thanks to whoever put up that flyer at the campus center. Before I get to the interviews, I want to share something else that I wrote this week. Holidays are coming up and lots of people are traveling and probably going to spend time with family. And I had some family time in Kentucky last month. So I was in rural southeastern Kentucky the day before Election Day 2016. I was staying with my brother and his family, some like-minded people. And then four children of my sister's, kids between the ages of 12 and 22, came over. They'd driven 3 hours from Virginia to buy a goat. So we had lunch together, and my brother brought up the impending election. So, what do you think about the election? Who are you going to vote for? My brother Chris posed as we sat down for the meal, and somebody groaned trepidatiously. I wasn't sure if it was someone from his family or theirs, or me. I'm serious, said Chris. I know people say don't bring up politics if you want to get along with your family, but this is too important for us to not talk about, as a family and as a society. So, who are you going to vote for? My sister's kids started out on the shy side, but my brother, who loves to debate, got out of them that they were all voting for Trump, or would if they were old enough. Of course, my brother, whose wife immigrated here, wanted to know why. What information were they basing their decision on? What understanding of the world and of public policy? And what interpretation of their Christian values? Well, as you can imagine, it was a struggle to connect and to actually listen deeply without saying, but. There were the usual predictable arguments. Second Amendment rights? You think people should be able to have guns for self-defense? Well, do you think there should be any limits on the type of weapons an individual can legally have? Bombs? My brother recalled the day his son was held hostage at 5 years old, and my brother was face to face with a masked man holding a knife to my nephew's throat. My brother said, I had chosen to not have a gun in the house. Neighbors had told me it was a dangerous neighborhood and I should keep a gun, but we had decided not to. But had we decided to have a gun in the house, my impulse might have been to use it. In that moment, I wanted to blow that man's brains out, my brother said. But had I done that, his voice cracked, had I done that, my son would have witnessed that. I never thought of it that way, said one of the nieces. We had more discussion around taxes and them feeling like higher taxes on people with more money is essentially a fine for being wealthy and successful. I inquired if they were aware of how schools were funded with property taxes or if they'd heard of redlining, which they hadn't, or how the GI Bill mostly benefited white people like us. My dad went to college on the GI Bill, and all of us sitting at the table had benefited from his education. Though the tone of the conversation was calm and considerate, it felt draining and demoralizing to me, especially when one of my nieces inquisitively asked my brother, well, if you think the tax structure should be different, why don't you move to a country like that? Eventually, after a couple hours, we all got tired of sitting around the table, and we ran outside to play together. Well, honestly, except for me, I sulked and worked alone for an hour, and then I joined the party. So I imagine many listeners have had conversations like this with family and friends, or perhaps you will over the holidays. And yeah, we need to be able to talk with family about divergent political views. If we talk with people we're not close to, we might lose friendships, but I would hope that if we talk with family, we're still going to be family. But I recognize many cases it's just kind of like the opposite, unfortunately. My brother isn't always right, but I do think he's right that people who are close, be it by blood ties or geographic ties or some shared interest, should be able to share opposing political views without losing interest in each other. But it's hard, and it might not be safe, and it leaves a bad taste in your mouth when your family talks about voting for Trump so he'll support Supreme Court justices who won't marry people who, quote, choose that lifestyle, quote. I just want to say, come visit me in Northampton, and you can see how society is just falling apart, what with all these women-led families who adopt kids and provide loving homes, so it's terrible. Okay, so back to talking about politics with family members. I was recounting the discussion between my brother's family and my sister's family, and in that lunchtime chat, my brother and I did most of the evangelizing. And I know we had a hard time really listening to why they would vote for Trump. But the ironic thing is, when I look at the lifestyle of my sister's white conservative farm family and the lifestyle of my brother's mixed-race immigrant more liberal family, my sister's family actually lives more sustainably. Like, they raise their own food and animals and make things, whereas my brother's family, because of his wife, is always buying clothes, toys, stuff, and throwing stuff away. So if I'm going to judge someone for their commitment to justice, it's a crapshoot. In conclusion, here's what I think. Build bridges, not walls. And as an exercise to build a kinder world, try finding someone you disagree with and build a bridge. When you have the energy. All right. So if you just tuned in, this is Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring, with a very sore throat. So I'm going to play the first part of this interview with Wade Wofford, producer of The Answer. Oh, he's introducing himself.
My name's Wade Wofford. I'm a Northampton-based filmmaker. I am the writer, director, producer of The Answer.
And The Answer is showing on Friday, right?
It is showing on Friday at the Academy of Music. The film's at 7:30, doors at 7, red carpet, meet the cast and crew at 6:30.
So can you tell me a little bit about this film?
It's a film about basically a bunch of guys who go backpacking when one of them loses his wife in a sudden car accident. He's kind of falling apart, and they go backpacking to help him heal, basically.
How did you get the idea for it?
It was more based around the idea of how male friendship is never depicted in film. Like, in film, where I think, like, male voices really dominate, like, you know, a lot of male directors, a lot of male screenwriters, a lot of male characters, But then despite this overprominence of male voices within this form of media, you never see depictions of male friendship. You never see depictions of male vulnerability. It's always, you know, when you see this overrepresentation of male voices, it's always goofy when they have relationships. It's like, I love The Hangover. I love you, man. What's that one about the teenagers? Superbad. Like, mm-hmm. These are hysterical depictions of male friendship, but they're not real. They're not true to life. They're, you know, I wish that men were this funny, uh-huh. but we're not. So, uh-huh. So it's, you know, I really wanted to honor the relationships that I have with friends and that I see other men having that are just never voiced in mm-hmm. film.
So there's like six guys, or the actors are on the Appalachian Trail together for a while. Is that okay?
Yeah. The film's 2 hours long, and I'd say of the 2 hours, they're on the trail for 95 minutes. So mm-hmm. most of it takes place in the woods.
So for these actors, for the crew, like, how did those relationships, what were they like in the course of this filming? How did they develop?
So we tried casting locally. We couldn't find a lot of local talent. So we went down to New York City to have casting sessions. We saw, I think, about 200 actors over the course of 2 days. Grueling,
wow.
Grueling.
Wow.
I started as an actor. And I mean, I haven't been interested in acting in a decade or more, but if I had known the experience of a director when I was an actor, it would have helped me so uh-huh. much walking into casting sessions. I mean, they're so grueling for the actors who are just like, I have 4 minutes to make an impression, uh-huh. to make these people think they want to work with me and I'm talented. Uh-huh. But on the other end, it's just like, oh my God, I've been sitting behind this table for 10 hours and you're the 100th person I've seen today. Yeah, really strange experience being on the other side of that table.
Like, how do you choose? How do you remember who's who? I mean, I guess you take notes, but like, how do you select?
It's amazing, you know, how many of the people, I mean, this is terrible, but how many people are just bad? So, I mean, it's just people walk in and it's just like, oh, you're terrible. You're just immediately ruled out. And then sometimes people will come in an audition who are really good, but they're just weird, and you're like, wow, you know, the way we're making films at this point, independent films, like, we don't have trailers and honey wagons and 4-star hotels where everybody has their own room. It's like we're renting a couple of houses and we're packing people into the houses, and you got the whole cast and the whole crew, and they're all staying between these two houses, and you need people that you can be around 24 hours a day for 18 days straight. So some people would be really talented, but it would be like, you seem like you'd be a little off to live with. You seem like there might be some drama on set. And two, just some people just knock it out of the park. Like mm-hmm. some of the actors mm-hmm. would walk into the room. It was funny because one of the most challenging, walking into casting, I was most worried about the role of Jace that ended up being played by this guy named Alan Even. Really talented Canadian actor who lives in New York City. This character, Jace, is written to be overbearing. Mm-hmm. He's written to be like the smartest guy that you've ever met in your life. Just this kind of brilliant mind that is restless and has a little bit of attention deficit disorder. I think most actors would ruin this character in overplaying him. And so walking into casting, I was like, oh my God, I'm so worried that every actor that comes in is just going to do this awful overplayed. And this guy, Alan Even, just walked in and it wasn't even what I was looking for. Mm-hmm. He didn't do what I expected an actor to do playing this role. And I think that was what made it great. Is I walked in expecting the way for this character to be played is this. And he just nailed it, did something entirely different.
Very cool. That's cool. So, like, when you all were actually out in the field or on the trail, I don't know, what did you learn stuff about friendships between men, or how did you all bond. I imagine there are probably some hard times.
Definitely. some long days. Yeah. I mean, long, long days. But once we cast everyone... Should we back up?
No, go ahead. Just go ahead.
Once we cast everybody, we went down to New York City for rehearsals, mm-hmm. which is pretty rare in film. I think it's when you're working on super big budget film and you're working with an actor like Bradley Cooper, who's doing like back-to-back-to-back films. It's like, I've slotted you in for a 30-day shoot starting on this date and ending on this date, and they're going to use every day of that for filming. There's never any time for rehearsal, or 90% of the time there's no time for rehearsal. So one of the great things about working with independent films is you've got a little bit more flexibility. So we went down to New York City and we spent about a week rehearsing with the actors. And so I would have them two by two coming in, and we'd sort of do sessions like building character histories. And, you know, we'd talk about, what do you understand your character to be? What do you understand the history between your character and the next? Because one of the things that's interesting about the film is not all of these guys are friends with each other. Like, they're all friends with Gavin, the guy who's lost his wife, and that's the reason that they're here on this trip. And they all know of each other after years of being friends with Gavin, but they don't all have close relationships with each other. So sometimes building character histories was, all right, well, so what do you know of Jace through your friendship with Gavin? And so you start having really interesting things like, well, the first time I met him, and the actors start making really interesting choices of, well, I met him when I was in undergrad, and, you know, I was going to a different school than Gavin, and you know, so the actors really start digging in. And as they were digging in, we were in the room alone together, and I would sort of give them homework. So I'd be like, all right, so I want you guys to write a... something that, like, an inside joke that you always, something that you always say when you greet each other because you haven't seen each other in years. And then a lot of those things got worked into the actual film. There's this moment when Jace's character arrives and he's late and he sort of has his initial greetings on camera with all the characters. And you really see those character histories, that work, come out in that moment, like, as they greet one another, because you can just tell by the way they greet each other. Oh, that guy doesn't like you, and you have a ton of history with this guy, and really fascinating to see those things come to life, brought to life by great actors.
I'm curious if in your writing of the script or choosing of characters, if how do you create these characters? What I'm really curious about, if there's thoughts on trying to represent different, like, class, race, a culture, like... How are those, in terms of like a diverse cast, or what types of diversity?
Well, as you see in a lot of like modern films, like you're seeing, like, this is a huge part of the conversation, that a lot of actors are feeling that they're underrepresented, that their voices aren't present in statistically, there's not as many black voices in film as there are a percentage of black population in the United States. You know, there's not as many statistically like Hispanic voices. So yeah, you do see a lot. It's a big conversation that Hollywood is sort of having with itself, mm-hmm. or that culture is having mm-hmm. with Hollywood mm-hmm. and Hollywood is reacting to. And you're seeing this almost annual drama that Will Smith, you know, is getting screwed out of a nomination for Concussion. You know, why are no black actors nominated this year? Like, it's a real kind of hot topic in filmmaking right now. But walking into the answer, the diversity came, I think that diversity truly comes if you're just open during your casting sessions. I think that so often characters get written into a script as, this guy is white, this guy is Hispanic, this guy is black, this guy is Asian. And walking into the answer, it was more, these two guys are brothers, so they need to look like brothers. Other than that, it was just anybody. Well, there's one character, Fareed, who was written to be Iranian. And that happened because I had worked previously on a film with the actor Nima Jarabji, and he was such a pleasure to work with that I'd written the role for him. Mm-hmm. And so that became part of his character's identity, was he was Iranian, like Nima, the actor, was. So that diversity was written in. But then, you know, like John Anthony, the guy who plays Alex, he wasn't written to be black. But when we held auditions, we were just like anybody. Like when you're entering into like backstage and New York casting calls, they'll ask you like, you know, what race, what age, and we just put everybody. So when people came in, like we had, you know, all sorts of histories, races, creeds coming into audition. And then if you're open to it, just the best guy gets the part. And J.A. rocked this role. And so a black guy became Alex. And then like after things like that happened, then we started looking at when we started building character histories. Okay, so, you know, how does this character's racial identity come into play? Like, does that change his dialogue? Does that? And then the actor is collaborating with me as writer director on, as he's building his character history, that character history is changing the dialogue of the script, and the script is getting rewritten as a result. So really cool kind of collaboration.
Do you have any thoughts about like working with all these men, doing this film about relationships with men? Do you have any thoughts on how men's friendships, particularly heterosexual men's friendships, affect their relationships with women?
Big time. Well, another, you know, as we're talking about diversity, we were totally focused on race, but there's two gay characters in the film, and there's actually that becomes sort of a source of conflict. One of the more conservative characters is upset that the gay character, who shares a lot of history with Gavin and is one of so Gavin's the guy who lost his wife. Wesley is a friend of his from college, and Wesley is invited on the trip, and he brings his significant other, Fareed. And Alex, one of the more conservative characters, he doesn't like that this guy has brought his wife. And so this creates conflict, like, day two of the trip, where it's just like, okay, you've been being an asshole since we arrived. Let's just clear the air. And you sort of have like an argument within the film.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio, WXOJLP 103.3 FM in Northampton. You've been listening to an interview with Wade Wofford. He's a producer, director, writer of the film called The Answer that's premiering this Friday evening at the Academy of Music here in Northampton, a locally produced film with local scenes as well. All right, I'm going to go back to that interview with Wade.
So there's a conflict between these two characters where one character is upset that another character has brought his significant other, his homosexual boyfriend. And, you know, one of the things that I like about the film is with all of these diverse voices, you're seeing a depiction of how men cope with the presence of homosexuality. So you've got a conservative man who's forced to, you know, sleep in a tent just feet away from two gay guys sleeping in another tent. And you sort of see his dialogue with those characters as he comes to terms with it and realizes they're just guys. Like, they're just guys. I don't even know if I'm answering your question anymore.
Yeah, no.
I'm just rambling.
I sort of asked about like men's relationships with women, like heterosexual men's relationships with women. But that's great too.
Well, no. So well, one of the things that when we were gearing up for the film, it was like, is this a film for men? Who is our target audience? This is very much a conversation that you have like with your producers when you're in pre-production on a film, like who is your target audience? Who's going to want to see this movie? And at first glimpse, it's a film about male friendship. It's a film that takes place in the woods in this kind of Jack London-esque, you know, like masculinity. It's a film for men. But I felt really, really strongly that it's not a film for men. I mean, it's a film for men and for women because it's, you know, with the feminist movement that's going on, or the, what are we in the third feminist movement? Where does the female voice come into the film? Because in the opening 3 minutes of film, you see Jessica, the wife who is lost, and you never hear her voice. You just see an everyday morning. They're waking up in bed together. She has this thing where she, you know, he has stinky breath in the morning. She makes him eat an apple. So you have this sort of glimpse of how beautiful their relationship is. And then the next time you see her, she's stretched out on the gurney, you know, all torn up from her car accident. So the film is driven by a love for a woman that tears this man down. And, you know, you, in different moments in the film, you see these men each dealing with her loss in their own way. So men's relationship with women is kind of inherent to the film because it's a loss of a great woman that has inspired the journey. I still don't know if I'm answering your question.
You know, I guess really I'll just say it. My question sort of getting at, like, I feel like with men in my life, my relationships with them would be a little maybe easier or less stressful if they had more stronger relationships with men.
So if men had good friendships with each other, it would be easier for them to maintain friendships with women.
That's kind of what I'm getting at. What do you think about that?
Well, I've learned through making this process and collaborating with some of the male collaborators that I've worked with that maybe my relationships with men have been unique, like closer, more intimate than relationships that other men have experienced with men. And I don't know. I mean, that's one of the things that the making of this film has sort of made me open my eyes to is just how lucky I've been with male friends. Like I have no problem crying with my male friends. I have no problem calling up a male friend when I'm in a state. I don't feel any need to like push down my emotions. I have so many men in my life that I could turn to and hug or cry or, you know, once I was traveling in San Francisco with a male friend and it was really cold and we couldn't find a hotel and we ended up sleeping in the park in San Francisco and we were freezing. And so we literally just like spooned each other. And, you know, I had no issue with that, but I learned through the making of this film that a lot of men don't have those kinds of bonds. And I could see how if I was a woman that was used to having bonds of that nature to suddenly interact with men who are kind of stunted and repressed, that might be a really frustrating experience. I can't really speak to what that would feel like in terms of like my own male friendships because I've become accustomed to they're comfortable, we hug each other, we are emotional with each other, that if I met a guy who wasn't comfortable with that, he probably wouldn't be attractive as a friend. And I wouldn't experience. Maybe I'm the wrong person to ask.
No, it's cool to hear your thoughts and your experience on that. Yeah. So this film, it's been like a bunch of years in the making, right? How long is this? Have you been working on this?
It's weird drawing that line. You know, where does it start? Does it start when your screenplay's finished? Does it start when you enter pre-production? If you start, you know, on the first draft of the script, about 6 years, six, 7 years, something like that.
When were you filming? When were the actors?
We were filming in the summer of, let's see, not 16, not 15, 14, the summer of 14.
Okay. And then after that, like, so my coworker Ellen Clegg, she did some of the background music that was like in the, that would have been after that, some of that, right?
Yeah, that was the winter of 15 into 16. So we did a little over a year of post-production. And then we did a year of film festival submissions and marketing and all that jazz.
On the marquee at the Academy of Music, it says U.S. premiere. So did it play in Canada or somewhere?
Canada International Film Festival. We won the Rising Star Award, which is really cool. Really cool.
Yeah. Cool. Anything else you'd like to say?
The film, I think a lot of people that I've talked to have assumed that because it's a premiere event and there's red carpet and the cast and crew are going to be there, that it's a closed event. But that's not what this is at all. Like, we're actually showing it here in Northampton because we really wanted to invite the community that helped make the film possible to come and see the film on the big screen. And so this is more a thank you. I mean, that's why we're airing it on Black Friday, is sort of like as a thank you to the Valley, because independent filmmaking is really, really, really difficult. You know, when it takes 7 years to make something and you're, you know, just money just flying out the window in every direction. You know, if you don't have a trust fund or a rich uncle to finance things, you're largely financing it yourself or just constantly pounding the pavement. And so to cross the finish line is such an enormous accomplishment. And I mean, you know, I mean, I'm 40 and this is my second film. And between these two films, it's consumed 14, 15 years of my life. So, I mean, at this rate, cranking out a film every 7 years, it's such an enormous thing. And the only way that the answer was possible was because the Pioneer Valley just surrounded us and they fed our cast and crew and they gave us locations for free. I mean, from Smith College to Mount Holyoke to UMass to local houses that people gave as locations.
Yeah, if you want to be any more specific about thank yous, like, feel free.
No, I mean, it's great. Like, Jane Fleischman and Joan Tobochnik gave their house. Tom Navin and Mike O'Neill gave their house. My brother and sister-in-law, they live in Connecticut, but they gave their house for a location. And it's stressful having a film crew in your house. It's very stressful because, I mean, you know, the doors open and suddenly 20 people are walking in and they're all carrying bags and bags and bags filled with, like, large metal objects that are getting set up on your hardwood floors. And, you know, they're moving things around so that, like, you know, the frames on the walls are reflecting in the camera. So you've got to, like, you got to take this down and put something else up, or take it down, take the glass out and rehang it. You know, this is going to be really stressful for a homeowner. So people letting us into their house is such a huge thing. And just feeding a cast and crew. When you got 20 people and you're working 18 hours a day, if you stop to go out to eat, you lose a lot of shooting time when you add all that up. So you've got to have food delivered to the set. And you don't want to be handing people sandwiches. You want real hot food that's nourishing. And we had so many people just come to set and bring us meals. Northampton was just really, really great. The whole valley was great. We shot at local businesses. We shot at Amherst Books. We shot at Pasta y Basta. We worked with the Northampton Police Department for a scene that takes place on the streets. It was just, the community was so, so great that we really wanted to say thanks. So, you know, we're doing the screening of the film here as our U.S. premiere very intentionally. We're doing it on Black Friday very intentionally as sort of a symbolic thanks, giving of thanks to the community that made the film possible. And it's cool, too, because you know Ellen Clegg. She was a composer on our film. John Michael Field, he composed a bunch of music and wrote some songs for our film. They're both local artists. Dan Peck, the colorist, he's local. Mike Haas, my business partner, he's local. Jake Hulse, he was the director of photography on the film, he's local. So it's also a great opportunity for the local artists that contributed. Sarah Hendricks, now Fransman, since she married, she was a producer on the film. It's just a great opportunity for, you know, their circle of people to come and, like, share their art. Like, you know, I love the fact that Ellen Clegg is going to be at the event, and, like, some of her friends and probably some of the people that she drums with will be there, and they'll be hearing her drum compositions in the film. And that's such a cool thing, you know, just film's a very collaborative medium, and you can't make it with one person. And so to have this moment where, you know, it shows on the big screen and everybody comes, you know, we really are encouraging the community members to come out, like, avoid the multiplex, avoid the 75th Marvel movie that you've seen this year, avoid Harry Potter number 8, you know, like, and see a real authentic film about that the Hollywood machine doesn't ever make.
Did you hear how Ellen first found out about the film that was showing?
No.
Yeah, she was during her Fuddle People route and riding down Main Street with bike and trailer. She looked up at the marquee at the Academy of Music and it said, the answer, U.S. premiere. She was like, that sounds familiar. That sounds familiar. Oh, yeah, that's the one I made some music for.
And then she got an email. That's my film. That's my film. Yeah, it was great. She reached out to me, like, as I'm working on the mail, the email, just to go out to the cast and crew, like, mm-hmm. Hey, we just got the premiere set. I wanted to invite you guys. She beat me to the punch on that one. She moved faster than I could.
Could you just restate the when and where?
So the film is showing at the Academy of Music on this Friday, Black Friday. Red carpet at 6:30. Doors at 7. 7:30 is the film. The film's 2 hours long, so it'll get out about 9:30. You can get tickets at aomtheater.com, and that's AOM is in Academy of Music Theater, and they spell it with an R-E, so theatre.com. Or you can just go to theanswerfilm.com and watch the trailer and follow the link from there to the premiere. You can get tickets in advance, or you can get them at the door. The Academy of Music is huge, so... no shortage of space in there.
And there are $10, is that right?
$10. The Academy of Music adds, the Northampton Historical Society, I think, adds a buck. I think the Academy box office adds a buck. So I think at the end of all the fees and stuff, it's like 12 bucks.
Cool. Well, thanks. Thanks for your work. I look forward to seeing it.
Yeah. Can't wait.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. That was an interview with Wade Wofford, the producer, director of The Answer. And I have actually another interview with Ellen Clegg, who a percussionist drummer that did some backup music for that. And I'll just go ahead and play that.
So Ellen, how did you get involved in this film, The Answer?
Well, I had a random Facebook message from Wade about looking for drumming some soundtracks for the film The Answer, and sounded really interesting to me, so I followed up with him, and yeah, he sent me a rough kind of sketch of the film, and then we set a date for me to go into the studio.
So what was it like in the studio?
Oh, it was cool. It was really, it was in Chicopee. It was pretty cool.
So you went in there, like, what was the process like? Did you have your drums with you, or you just, how did you figure out what you were going to do? How do you make a soundtrack for a movie?
Well, I brought in a lot of choices, so I schlepped a lot of different kinds of drums, and a steel drum, and, but I had seen the film, the particular scenes ahead of time, mm-hmm. so I had watched them kind of over and over, which is also what I do when I'm learning, like, a piece. Like, if somebody wants me to come and lay down a drumming part to their, like, I've put tracks on a lot of folk singers in the area, their CDs and stuff like that, so I just usually listen over and over, but in this case, just watch the scene over and mm-hmm. over to just kind of get a feel of it. And then Wade would cue up the scene, and hit record, and I just started playing. I kind of figured out what was kind of the main sound for each of the scenes that mm-hmm. I was doing, so that I would have, like, because we had to do one track and then another and then another and then another to build up the whole song, essentially, mm-hmm. for it. So I would get a sense of, okay, this is probably the drum to add in first in the scene. So we would record the scene all the way through, and then go back to the beginning of the scene, and I'd pick up another instrument, and I could hear what I had just played, you know. That's the other awesome and cool, like, for me, I really love listening, and I'm a really good listener, so it's kind of my strength as a musician. So in a recording studio, it's a huge strength because you can't like look at the person you're playing with or, you know, have any visual cues whatsoever because like all you have is the sound coming through the headphones.
Mm-hmm. So in the studio, you've got headphones on and then you're saying it's like there's like the movie screen in front of you watching the movie screen. Can you just describe that process?
Yeah. So I have the headphones on with whatever other sound is coming through from the film, like turned way down, so I at least know what's going on. But so I've, you know, microphone set up around the instrument I'm playing, and then headphones on so I can hear the sound of the scene and whatever track I've just played, and I'm watching the scene on a big screen.
In the drumming, like the rhythm just like comes to you.
Yeah.
Because you've been watching it.
Yeah. Well, I've enjoyed, like, I've played with some poets in the past. Like, mm-hmm. One of my strengths is improvising. And so just kind of being in the moment and being able to play something in response to what I'm seeing or hearing. So, and it was cool, you know, that the film is out in nature, you know, like that's, I mean, there are ways that the story itself resonated with me. So that made it a lot easier to kind of hop in and go with the flow of what I was seeing. But I'm also, you know, trying to hear what the producer's vision is, and you know, it's not just me, so I'm kind of finding my way with, okay, what are you looking for? Or you know, but Wade was very flexible and wanting to kind of see what I would come up with, so that was cool. He was really great to work with.
Here's another question. When you said that you play with a lot of poets, and then also that you have like the dialogue in the background of the earphones. I was wondering, if you notice a difference improvising off of people's words compared to playing with other instruments and improvising off of sounds, or like how like your instrument feels like you expressing yourself, and whether you feel like you're talking or whether you feel like you're dancing or whatever it is, how that expression feels.
Yeah. There was more room for me doing this with the film. I mean, with poetry, there's something about words specifically that, yes, there can a lot of times can be creating images, but there's, and also there's the rhythm of however the poet is speaking that I'm kind of tied into. And with a visual, I'm not really, like, I set the rhythm. Or if I go in and I play for people who've already like put down the guitar track or the singing or this or that, I have to just go with what is, and you know, which is fun. But folk singers, I love them when they're not always precisely in time. So as a drummer, it's like, it's kind of fun to be like, okay, we're going to slow down a tiny bit and then speed up a little bit. And then, you know, it's like that's a different kind of challenge of, all right, I can make this flow even though all I have is listening to what I'm listening to without seeing the person like in their hand slowing down on the guitar, you know. But no, it's fun.
How are you feeling about seeing the film premiere at the Academy of Music on Friday?
It's exciting. You know, I did this a couple years ago, and I thought, oh well, I guess nothing came of it. You know, and then I was actually working for Pedal People and biking past the Academy of Music, and I'm like, the answer? U.S., you know, premiere? I was like, wait a minute. I think that's that movie that I worked on. So it was kind of cool. And you're like, that sounds awfully familiar.
That's pretty funny.
It was funny. And then I got an invitation.
Wait, how did you feel when you were hauling the trailer full of trash and you saw that you were playing at the Academy of Music?
Yeah, gave me a pep in my step.
You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. That was an interview with Ellen Clegg, who did some background percussion on the local film The Answer, showing this Friday at the Academy of Music. Ellen Clegg also does workshops, and every Tuesday evening at St. John's, she does a workshop in Northampton. Also, there's the New Moon Drum and Dance Jam Sundays. New Moon Sundays, I guess. So there'll be one this Sunday, the 27th, November 27th at 6:30 at the Aikido of Northampton in Florence. And I think there may be like a suggested $10 contribution towards that. And you can find information about her drumming at ellenclegg.com. Let's see. Oh, here's another one more minute.
She put on headphones and wait. She would... watch the film. We had the film on a monitor, and she would watch.
This is one more minute of Wade Wofford talking about that process of making background music to a film.
Watch it, and she would sort of lay something down, and we'd record it, and then she'd be like, "All right, so put that onto the picture and play it back with that layer on it." And then she'd grab another instrument, and she'd be listening to what she just recorded. And would lay on something else, and then over and over and over, like, mm-hmm. 8 or 10 layers. And, I mean, it wasn't like she came in with compositions. Like, you know, she'd seen the scene that she was composing for, and I knew she'd thought about it, because she thought about what instruments do I bring and what order do I lay them on. And, like, she clearly had a plan for that. But there was no... I'm so used to working with composers for film where they're, like... writing on a piece of paper, like this note, then this note, then this note, you know, these instruments are playing this, these instruments are playing this. Her process was so much more fluid and organic, and it was so cool to watch it. And it was such like a breath of fresh air after that 15-month slog of disappointment and people quitting. And she was great. She was so great. I can't speak highly enough.
All right. Here's some other announcements. That was Wade Wofford talking about Ellen Clegg. Some other things going on this weekend. On Sunday, the 27th, is Linda Manor Assisted Living Open House. Linda Manor is in Leeds on Route 9. Invites the community to a holiday open house on Sunday, the 27th, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Let's see. Oh, actually, they want you to attend. They want you to attend. They want you to RSVP to them. I'm sure you can look that up. 588-3316. The open house will include pie and coffee and tours of one of the Northampton area's newest assisted living communities. I have a friend who lives there, so that I wanted to read that announcement because it's a reminder to me to go visit Jim Sector. All right. Also, coming up this Saturday and almost every Saturday, though maybe not in January and February. I found a boy today. It looks so good. Why did you throw it away? You want to learn to fix your bike? How to keep it tuned up so it's there for you when you need it? Or maybe you know already, but you just need to borrow a bike-specific tool that you don't have. Well, come to the Bike Lab.
Almost every Saturday since 2004, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., here in Northampton at 12 Northern Avenue.
Come with your bike or your questions.
And your willing attitude.
Spare parts scavenger hunt every weekend.
Venga para el Bike Lab de Northampton y se divertirá mucho, le enseñará muchas lecciones cómo arreglar bicicletas.
All repairs guaranteed to the end of the driveway.
Details are online at pedalpeople.coop. That's the Saturday Bike Lab at 12 Northern Avenue.
11 a.m. to 2 p.m.
They say freedom isn't free, but at the Bike Lab it is. Ya súbase a la bici, compa. Trépese a la de montaña, la bici urbana, la bici cross. Lléguele a la bicicleta. Ya
de menos a la eléctrica o a la estática, ya no hay tos. Llegaré pedaleando en el viaje de allá para acá.
Oh, and here's something else coming up. Tomorrow is a Thanksgiving dinner in Greenfield at Stone Soup's family-friendly pay-what-you-can cafe. Tomorrow, Thursday, November 24th, from 1 to 4 in the afternoon, drop-in hours. That's at 399 Hope Street in Greenfield. Let Stone Soup do the cooking so you can be with your family, make friends, and enjoy an inclusive community meal. And there'll be Thanksgiving crafts for kids. Also, there's the manna meal at Edwards Church, the annual Thanksgiving meal there tomorrow, too. I think that's usually like 11 to 2 or something like that. And don't forget to take a nice walk outside and enjoy nature tomorrow.
Every day in the electronic media, people talk, or more likely yell, about politics.
We do things differently.
Our job is to talk about the things that we hope will be of interest to you without all the shouting and anger.
We hope to provide facts and have reasonable discussions about the issues of the day.
That is to disagree without being disagreeable.
Join us every Friday at 7 p.m. for Civil Politics here on WXOJLP 103.3 FM in Northampton or anytime online at civilpoliticsradio.wordpress.com.
And now I'm going to play some Buffy St. Marie. This is Soldier Blue.
Out and I see a land, young and lovely, hard and strong. For 15,000 years we've danced your praises, prayed our thanks, and we've just begun. This is my country, young and growing, free and flowing, sea to sea. Yes, this is my country, ripe and bearing miracles in every pond and tree. Her spirit walks the high country, giving free wild samples and setting an example how to live. Yes, this is my country, wretching and turning like a baby burning out of live. I can stand upon a hill at dawn, look all around me, feel her surround me. Soldier Blue, can't you see her life has just begun? It's beating inside us, telling us she's here to guide us. Ooh, Soldier Blue, Soldier Blue, can't you see that there's another way to love her?
And that was Buffy St. Marie with Soldier Blue. If you want to see some intense graphics for the whatever on the YouTube, it's pretty intense. Well, I have a few minutes left here. You know what? I think I'm going to play. Never mind. I don't know what I'm going to do. Democracy Now! Is coming on at 5 o'clock.
Brothers and sisters, the time has come for each and every one of you to decide. It takes 5 seconds. 5 seconds of decision. It takes 5 seconds to realize that it's time to move.
Get yourself to downtown Northampton, Mass. on Friday nights, where a party has been going on for 26 years at the Valley's only all-ages, shoe-free, substance-free, alcohol-free, smoke-free dance spree. Six resident DJs, DJ Liquid G, DJ July, DJ Wheeler, DJ Alan S, DJ Zoe, and DJ Root, that's me, with a handle on booty-shaking tunes from yesterday and today, club, disco, hip-hop, world beat, funky breaks, progressive trance, oldies, swing, salsa, waltzes, and more. Part of the larger Dance New England network, Dance Spree has been providing a home for a vibrant and diverse community of folks who love to dance to a variety of music in a healthy atmosphere. Come check it out. Volunteers are always appreciated. Info online at dancespree.org or come by 8:30 p.m. Friday nights, 25 Main Street, 4th floor, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts.
The traditional light bulb, a groundbreaking invention in 1879. It's time we switch to longer-lasting Energy Star light bulbs. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at energysavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
Oh, yeah, I noticed the city. When I got back from my month away, I noticed that the city had started putting up LED streetlights around town. I'm curious what other people think about those. I kind of like how they don't shine in your eyes from afar, but when you're right underneath them, they're I find that to be pretty darn bright. Thanks for listening to Out There. Sorry, I'm just going to pass things from out there. This is actually from my refugee resettlement talk at my house. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! In like up in a minute.
Family over for Thanksgiving dinner. Taking a family to the library. Going to the museum. Sitting down and reading a book with mom and youngster. You know, I mean, it looks 1,000 different ways. Do you want to say more about that? What might that look like?
Yeah, help them look out what they need, see help from them. They doesn't mean they don't know nothing or they can do nothing. They can do anything except that they don't speak English. Mm-hmm. But as soon as they get it doesn't take long. It doesn't mean they didn't go to school. Some of them, they went to school, but in different language. But it doesn't take that long, you think. You might say, they proposed 5 years. I'm telling you, it's not going to be 5 years. I've been there before. 1 year, 2 years, they'll be independent.
You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I've been playing a recorded house meeting presentation by Susanna Crolius of Catholic Charities. This is WXOJ LP 103.3 FM in Northampton and streaming online at valleyfreeradio.org.